It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to Ace time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Monday to all of you. Hope you had a great weekend. Good weekend to be a Houstonian in the sports world for sure. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning. I am Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Hello, my friend.
It was an incredibly active and good weekend in the Houston pro sports scene. And I include the Houston Cougars in the pro sports scene.
Yes.
So, you had the Cougs with their two victories. You had the Astros going 2-1 versus a very good baseball team. You had the Rockets taking care of the Suns for the third time this season. What am I missing?
Did they ever? Shell Houston Open got all four rounds in by Sunday, when you consider how rainy it was Thursday and Friday.
Good job. And it kicking Mother Nature's butt.
And the winner set the record. The winner, minus 20, the winner was in the Shell Houston Open. It was Minwoo Lee, who held off Scottie Scheffler. So, yeah, that took place in Houston, last I checked. So the only thing that wasn't in Houston was me. I was in Lake Charles. It took me getting the hell out of here for all the things to line up and be right in the world here in the Houston sports scene.
You need to leave town more often.
I'd gladly do that. I would have.
Is that were you able to? Were you able to watch a bunch of the tournament from the sports book?
Well, yeah, we actually. So we went for a birthday of a friend of ours who actually works for Landry's, works for Tillman. So we got tables in the sports book with Primo View both Ooh. Nights. Yeah. So I watched plenty of basketball. I watched the Astros in like sportsbook watching mode, you know, where you're kind of watching a bunch of things at once. The main thing I was watching on Saturday was I needed Spencer Arrighetti to get more than 5.5 strikeouts.
Oh.
He only got 5. So yeah. I crumpled up my ticket when I saw that Joe Espada wasn't sending him back in for the 7th inning. I crumpled up my ticket and I threw it in Amy's face. And I said, here's your $100.
Arrighetti had all three starting pitchers looked very, very good and promising this week in the Astros' first three games. Arrighetti is the one that there's the most, perhaps, uncertainty about, and we're waiting to see. And he looked really, really good, except for that Jose Siri in the 6th inning. Walks, which he never does. Then he steals second.
Yeah.
Then he gets a third on a tag up, and then Arrighetti just gets hit a grounder,
yeah.
Looks to third to hold Jose Siri, and then makes the incredible mistake of expecting Jose Siri to be a reasonable
to do the right thing.
He could just turn to first and make an easy lob to Christian Walker. And Jose Siri took that opportunity to come home and allowed Spencer Arrighetti's only run.
Only run.
It's got to kill you when you've been pitching that well. And then just on a simple... I mean, if he had just gunned it to Christian Walker, that's likely an out at home, or Siri doesn't even try.
No, I'd rather lose a shutout on a 500-foot home run than a mental error like that. So,
but then Siri in that same inning bobbled the Yordan Alvarez hit to center field and had no chance to throw Paredes out at home.
Yep. So it was good. So Astros, it was weird not having a game on a Sunday yesterday, but whatever. We'll get to the Astros at 6:20 here. But we got to congrats the Cougs, man. The Cougs, and this was a game, it's a lot like the Rockets game last night, where the Cougs just jumped on their opponent early and then just didn't let him up. And it was a vintage Kelvin Sampson Cougs performance. Only 5 turnovers in the game for the Cougs. Yeah. And one of those was 5 turnovers, and one of them was just an intentional shot clock violation just to get off the floor at the end of the game. They jumped on these guys early. They didn't let them up. The entire story, Seth, of the first half, I think it was Steve Lapis that was the color analyst on the game, the former Villanova coach, and I felt like he kept saying it over and over again, like throughout the first half and then throughout the beginning of the second half, if they can just get it down to 10 with 10 minutes to go, that's your goal if you're Tennessee. It was their goal to get it down to 10 at some point. It felt like all afternoon, because the Cougs jumped on them so early, and they're on their way, man. They're on their way to the Final Four. They dominated Tennessee 69-50, the final score. Kelvin Sampson gets to the Final Four, first time since 2021, 7th time in program history.
And well, when we didn't get to talk about the Purdue game, right? That was Friday.
That was Friday, yes. We haven't talked about that.
So the Purdue game was where it was at. That was intense.
Yes.
And I mean, Purdue, when that game inside, that play, the kick out by Smith for the 3 for Purdue that ended up tying it up, and then at the very, very end of the game, Uzan has a brilliant inbound play that they'd worked on. It was the second option on that play, and he scored with how much time was left on the clock?
It was like a second. It was
0.2 seconds. Yeah. Or whatever. Well, the play by Purdue, too, to tie it was with 0.2 seconds left on the shot clock.
Yeah.
That was great. Now, that was in an environment where you're playing, even though you're the 1 seed, you're playing in Indiana against Purdue. Yeah. Basically, they had home court advantage.
Yep.
Tennessee had home court advantage just by virtue of so many more Tennessee Volunteer fans showing up.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like a road-like environment, so going to San Antonio is going to be nice.
Yeah, they've won, I think, 17 in a row now, the Cougs. 4 losses all year, 3 of them in overtime. They are 4.5-point underdogs to Duke. I'm taking all of those points on Saturday. Duke is a really good basketball team. Man, this Cougs team is just different. They're just different than these. You watch all these games in this tournament, you're like, all right, that is a different look. It's an older team for one thing, although there are a lot of old teams in this tournament once you get to this stage. Duke is kind of a rarity nowadays in that they've got 3 freshmen on the team. But the way they defend, the Cougs, their bigs, they're all like 6'8", but they've got arms that make them feel like they're like 7'4". I've been watching Stranger Things. A lot of Demogorgons out there, I think, for the Cougs. The way they smother, the way they play defense. And this team can score a little bit, unlike some of the other Coug teams. You know, with Cryer and Sharp and Uzan, those are 3 guys that shoot the 3 pretty well. So I think they're less prone to a stinker of an offensive game, which has been an issue the last few years. And last year the issue was they lost Jamal Shedd early in that Duke game, but they get a chance for a little bit of revenge. 4.5 points, man. I am taking the Cougs, and I'm taking all 4.5 points, and I may go money line on the Cougs.
I want to give credit and acknowledge the Cougs fans who were in attendance yesterday for starting an SEC chant at the end of the game. That was much appreciated.
Good snark.
Jim Nance was in attendance as well.
Mm-hmm.
Said that it's harder to be a fan than an announcer. He's never quite had to experience this. He never really got to attend a lot of these games when he wasn't working.
It is kind of fun. It's got to be fun for him that when he finally decides to hang it up, the school that he went to. There were various other times you could have tried to hang it up in recent Cougs history here, pre-Kelvin Sampson, and there would have been really no reason to go to the Final Four or the Elite Eight or whatever. This is kind of fun for Jim Nance. He retires, and his team is one of the 3 or 4 best teams in the country, so he can travel around and do his thing, man.
Does he still do a necktie giveaway, even though he's not announcing the game?
I don't know.
Is there any kind of... Maybe if it's a Cougs, he'll do that.
Maybe. We'll see. Kelvin Sampson met with the media after the game, obviously press conference after the game, and it was interesting. The reporter asked Kelvin Sampson, did you see anything over the last 36 hours from your team that would indicate that this was the kind of performance you were going to get?
Coach, you guys really jumped on him that first 5-10 minutes of the game. I'm wondering, what, if anything, did you see in the last 36 hours that might have indicated that your team was ready to do that?
Well, it wasn't the last 36 hours. It's since June. You know, we didn't get good the last 36 hours. We just went through the Big 12 tournament, played three games there. The thing I like about this team, I don't think they overreact to anything, good or bad.
Yeah.
When that question was asked, I gave it a 1.3% chance of Kelvin Sampson actually giving any credence to the question itself. Yeah. And I expected
it's a fun
him to
game
show
to play.
At least a little bit of mild irritation or somehow perceive it as an insult, which is a little bit of the edge that he manages to maintain. They go on these wins. He's the classic kind of coach that figures out ways to keep people uncomfortable all the time keeping a chip on everybody's shoulder. Those three losses early in the season when they started off 4-3 were probably the best thing that could have happened to them, because they got their scare early in the year, the little reminder that you can never relax. And a couple of them are versus very good teams, but I was joking when I called NCAA basketball professional basketball, even though it is. Yeah. But I do think that this team, maybe more so than any of the recent tournament teams, they operate like veteran professional NBA players would. They don't seem to blink in high pressure moments. They don't seem to relax when things are going well. It's really cool to see.
And credit, if we'll do an acknowledge me later for the Cougs at 7:20 when we acknowledge. But if we were to acknowledge, I think one player from that game yesterday, probably in the second half, Emmanuel Sharp hit those threes. The Tennessee was kind of creeping back in. They got it down to 10 with about six, seven minutes to go. Somehow they leave him wide open. He hits a three. They get it down to 11 a minute or two later. He hits a three, gets it back up to 14, and then he just hits a dagger three with about 2 or 3 minutes to go. So he three threes down the stretch for Emmanuel Sharp. And damn, just 5 turnovers for the Cougs. So this will be, Seth, this will be the opposite of what the Indy thing was, because now the Cougs all just, there's no excuse. You just drive down to San Antonio. It's a three-hour drive. You can be in your own bed each night if you want to. You know, it's not... Because I get it. Like, it's hard. And I think football is learning this, too, by going to the 12-team tournament, is that it gets hard to ask anybody other than the richest and the most diehard of diehards to travel to all these games. That, you know, to travel to 3 straight weeks, and if your team is doing what they're supposed to do, multiple games at each of these spots. But I think San Antonio is doable, man. I think that's you don't have to worry about flight or hotel for that one.
He's got his buddy Greg Popovich there too. So Popovich texted Kelvin Sampson.
Oh, nice.
Said, "I'm the happiest person in San Antonio today, but not as happy as you and Karen, Sampson's wife, and the family, and your whole program built with great character and love. Bravo, my good friend. From way back on our walks, enjoy the win tonight with a good red." So he's talking either about wine or a communist there. I don't know.
It's Kelvin Sampson spotted with 4 Russians after the game. that's cool. Well, Popovich is, that's good that Popovich, I hope Popovich is doing all right. He's had a rough year. So congrats to the Cougs, man. And curious how many of the Cougs, if you're a Coug, get in that car and drive to San Antonio next week. So we get 4 number ones. It's much to the chagrin of everybody who's been sticking up for Cinderella out there. We get 4 number one seeds. All right, off and running on a Monday. Good to be with you. Rockets win last night, 148-109 over the Suns, by the way. I'd mentioned that. Texans make a signing. We'll get to that. EJ Speed is now a Houston Texans. Astros are 2-1 on the season, opening weekend. What was good? I think a lot of good, obviously the record. Any concerns early on about the offense? We'll get into the good and the bad from the Astros and the Mets this weekend. We'll do that coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you. Yeah, my apologies to the good folks at the Texas Children's Houston Open. I said Shell Houston Open. Man, I was at the Nugget this weekend. I was drinking. I had a drink in my hand pretty much 90% of the time.
Yeah.
Cut me a little slack, all right, people?
Did somebody from Texans Children's text you?
No, it's I don't know. I just have their phone number. I don't know where they work, but geez, come on. Texas. Well,
how did you realize you made the mistake?
Because two people texted me, but they didn't say who they're with. Yeah, they were just pointing out that I got the wrong sponsor. So, yeah, Texas Children's Houston Open. Minwoo Lee. I got that right. So he was the winner of that. Astros take 2 out of 3 from the Mets this weekend. More good than bad, I would say, Seth. Not overly concerned about the lack of offensive production. This is one of those things. Early in the year, unless you're the Yankees using torpedo bats, the pitching is typically ahead of the hitting.
Hey, these torpedo bats, I wish I had never read anything about it other than the headlines, because it made it look at first like the Yankees were up to no good. They're using these bats that have more of the weight put towards an individual batter's sweet spot, so he gets more exit velocity and everything. But then you read into it and you realize, oh, there's multiple guys on multiple teams using them right now, and that they've been around since 2022. It just seems like this year more players are adopting them. Plus, the 9 home runs that they had in that game,
yeah.
Aaron Judge had 3 of them. He's playing with a normal bat.
Yeah.
So it's not... It's not the... I thought it was going to hopefully be some kind of scandalous thing for the Yankees, but it turns out that, hey, it is a technological innovation that maybe... I'm surprised the Astros don't have any guys that, that we know
surprised
of.
Surprised they didn't. If Luno were still the GM, they'd have had these 5 years ago, the Astros. That's what they would have spent their... They would have spent their off time during the COVID hiatus creating new bats, you know?
I thought they look more like... People are saying they look like torpedoes. I think they look more like those juggling pins.
Oh, yeah.
Like the modified bowling pins that people juggle with, just maybe a little bit bigger.
Yeah. Torpedo bat's a cooler name, though, than juggling pin bat.
That's true.
You know,
that's
like it's torpedo. It's got some gravitas.
Now, yeah, the drunk clown at your party bats. Yeah. It's a torpedo bat does sound cool.
Less annoying. Yeah, the torpedo bat. Yeah, the 9 home runs was a bit of a bat signal. Like, hold on. What's going on over in Yankee Stadium? I was sitting in the sports book for that. Nestor Cortez threw 3 pitches and gave up 3 home runs to start the game. It was the most surreal. And the coolest thing was he was on the Yankees last year. They're doing this. I say the coolest thing like I root for the Yankees. I'm like, no. But it was kind of a fun thing to be around a bunch of other sports fans for,
If any of you saw the headlines but didn't read or hear anything else about it, it's not illegal at all. It's completely within the rule book. Yeah. And it's one of those things that you gotta admit that it's brilliant, because a lot of brilliant ideas immediately after you find out about them, you're like, oh, wait, why did nobody think of that? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why nobody thought of that. With all the analytics and all the former NASA scientists and whatnot that there are in baseball, it took until 2022 for this guy who at the time had been working as an analytics person with the Yankees,
man.
Former MIT grad, came up with it. And players have kind of dabbled with it in the last few years, but sounds like a lot of them just don't like the feel of it at first, so they're not sold on it.
Yeah.
I think that you made a point before the show. It feels like this is the kind of thing that Luno would have, been on top of. He would have known all about it. A lot of the managers being interviewed this week have said, like, I don't know, I kind of heard about it, but not really. So he would have known about it, and then I think he would have sold it to his players hardcore.
Yep.
Because there's that learning curve of you're trying a new bat, you probably start... Probably not that good when you start off on it. So players don't want to sacrifice a few weeks of preparation in the offseason to get accustomed to a completely different feel of bat.
I feel like that was one of my prevailing feelings this week. And I'm like, oh, this is an innovation that the Astros weren't on the cutting edge of.
What the hell, man?
Yeah, no disrespect to Dana Brown, but this is maybe a byproduct of going back to with a GM who's got more of that old school gut feel scout to them. You know, we're not.
I do hope. Honestly, I hope that the effect is real, and that despite every little annoying tweak and change they've made to the rules over the last 10 years to try to increase offense and pace of play, that if this one simple innovation is what really amps up offense in baseball, I'd be cool with it. But I also want my team to get on board.
I don't want to get
especially when
behind.
Especially when you're not scoring more than 3 runs on any given
scored
night.
6 runs the first 3 games. You finally got your first extra base hit midway through the 3rd game of the season. So that's not good. Let's start with the good, though. So good and bad from the Astros this weekend. I think the biggest thing, and regardless of what the record looked like at the end of the weekend, if you had told me that you're going to get a quality start out of Framber, Hunter, Framber Valdez, Hunter Brown, and Spencer Arrigetti. I would have signed up for that regardless of the record. This is a team where I think the pitching, especially if, you know, Lance McCullers had another decent, you know, he had another good day in Sugarland. We'll put him off to the side. But these three guys, and especially Seth, if Arrigetti, if, because you're already counting on Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown to be what they were last year, that's not negotiable. Yeah. You have to have them be what they were last season. For Hunter, from like late May on, for Framber all year, you have to have that for them to do what you want them to do this year. One outing out of Spencer Arrigetti, but it's against a good team, and it's building off of what he did the second half of last season. That, to me, is the most encouraging thing from the weekend, is Spencer Arrigetti's six innings of really efficient baseball on Saturday. That's a huge development if it continues for this team.
And it was even better than it looked on paper, where he let up a run, but that was in a weird sequence of events that didn't have as much to do with his pitching. Well, you know what? No, I'll take that. I mean, he walked Jose Siri. Jose Siri's walked like one time in his career.
Yeah.
So Jose Siri walks, then he steals second. But Arrigetti had made a throw to pick off Jose Siri, but Brendan Rodgers just couldn't handle it. It dropped out of his glove. Then Siri gets the third on a tag up, and then Arrigetti, just in a mental bloop, gets a grounder, turns and tries to hold Siri on third base, but then turns back to first and just lazily lobs it up to Christian Walker, and it gives time for Jose Siri to get home. It's his mistake, and he's got to own it. Except it sucks that it's a reflection on his pitching when it comes to the stats, when it's more of a mental error than anything else.
Yeah, but you're right. The eye test, I mean, that's how the Mets had to go score a run. You know, like they needed that to score a run again.
He maneuvered. Siri just maneuvered his way around the bases. Very effective. Like, it was impressive. I love Jose Siri in the way that you love any disobedient child.
Mm-hmm.
The kid that's always in detention, but he's got a glint in his eyes, so you can't.
It's a good
kid. You just
kid.
Can't even get mad at him as you're sending him to detention. The detention monitor loves him. You know, as Siri, stop messing around back there, you silly guy.
Yeah.
But I don't like it when he does it to the Astros.
No.
I didn't like it when he was doing it to the Astros as a player on the Astros. But I also, like, when he does classic Jose Siri things, had a great inning, and then at the bottom of that inning, bobbled the Yordan Alvarez RBI that allowed Paredes to come home.
The life of Jose Siri, man. Here was Spencer Arrigetti with John Smoltz after the game, talking about why is he different now than he was when he came up early last season.
I attribute it to a couple of things, maybe a change in mentality, a shift in my focus, maybe taking it away from the stuff model and kind of just trying to go out there and really compete my nuts off every time I take the ball. I feel like that's really the biggest thing. And then, like you said, just kind of changing the attack plan a little bit, switching the mix up, and just not ever being too predictable.
Compete my nuts off.
That's what we're all trying to do, man. We're all just trying to compete our nuts off every day.
Be best in the world, and then underneath, competing our nuts off.
C-O-N-O. Compete our nuts off. Kono.
Dude, by the end of every show, I want to be a gelding, damn it. That's right.
yes.
He sacrificed his manhood for that show.
That's it, man.
So let's hope he can grow him back by tomorrow morning.
Castrate me in the H, man. Castrate
Bam.
Me in the H.
Yeah, Arrigetti, he had a good interview. I think it was with Matt Kawahara this summer, or during spring training, about just going through that process last year where he realized, okay, I got all this fun stuff, and in the minors it was great to really kind of just be cutesy with people, and then you get to the majors and you realize, oh, these guys will feast on that. Well, so you just got to be more aggressive.
He's one of those examples, I guess, Seth, if we're doing a referendum here on Dana Brown's aggressiveness in bringing young guys up, right? Dana Brown is more aggressive than his predecessors in allowing young guys to get to the majors. Now, last year was out of necessity. You had all those injuries in the starting rotation. So the plan, I don't think, was to call Spencer Arrigetti up from Sugarland as early in the season as they did. But they had to. They needed arms. They had to field a starting rotation. The way he's progressed, you know, I think the plan was probably for him to do what he did last year at Sugarland, not do it on the big league club.
Yeah.
And obviously now the early returns, both in the second half of last season and now obviously just one start this season, but early on, is that was good for him. Like it was done in an instance where you didn't want to do it. It was done out of a triage situation where you just needed arms. And you didn't. And early on, you're like, I don't know if this is good for this kid. I mean, there, you know, he's having games where he's given up seven runs in an inning and a third. But it clicked for him eventually. Like, that was a good learning experience for him doing it at the big league level.
I thought in terms of clicking and in an early season game where the offense hasn't been that good, the most promising thing was that, all right, Yordan starts off 0 for 10. He was 0 for 10 in his first 10 plate appearances. Zero hits in his first 10 plate appearances. He had three walks and a sac fly, but he has not been vintage Yordan. But then on a day where this damn Griffin Canning, he had the 7.5 career ERA versus the Astros. He had one of the worst ERAs in baseball all last year. Is two out of three pitches throwing sliders. Mm-hmm. Yordan, in the previous at-bat, before his go-ahead RBI, it just flailed at a slider in the dirt.
Bad, yeah.
But he adjusted, waited on a misplaced slider, and ends up with a really hard hit double to center field, and that's the go-ahead run. The fact that they showed way more plate discipline through these first three games, they walked a bunch. This is a team that walked the fewest walks in Major League Baseball last year. They do look very much like a team that's getting back to what used to be their bread and butter, which is incredible judgment at the plate.
Yeah, I think Christian Walker, Paredes, I love that Paredes has a 111 batting average and a 333 on base percentage.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like he's not hitting the ball all that well, but man, he is finding a way to get on base. He's, you know, that was his calling card coming here with him and Christian Walker both. Well, a little patience at the plate.
That RBI, Yordan's RBI alone. If you get Altuve and Paredes on base, and there you go. Get Yordan some traffic to work with.
Yep. Not worried about Christian Walker, even though the batting average doesn't reflect it. Man, he's hitting the ball hard quite a bit.
He was. Yeah, I think McTaggart's article said he's already had four hits with an exit velocity of over 110 miles per hour, which is, there were only two Astros that had four or more exit velocity hits that hard all last season.
Yeah.
And they're like, it matches the eyeball test. It seems like every one of Christian Walker's outs has been just a rocket.
Yeah.
With a little bit of bad luck.
Yeah. There's like, they only scored six runs, and it's probably easier to have takes like this when you win two of those games.
Yeah.
And you're 2-1. But like, you know, like Pena hit the big home run to break the seal on Saturday. He's looked more disciplined at the plate this year. Like, it sounds weird to say this after a weekend where they scored on average two runs a game, but I'm encouraged by the level of professionalism and patience and discipline that I'm seeing from the key guys in the lineup there. You know,
yeah, we've seen that from both Christian Walker and Paredes already.
Yeah.
They've performed as advertised at the plate. Statnerd Seth will tell you that Christian Walker's expected batting average right now is .367.
Yeah, he's hit the ball
hard a ton. Yeah. He's just had bad luck.
Yeah.
He's our new Kyle Tucker.
That's it, man.
Kyle Tucker, who every year seemingly starts off with really bad luck in the expected batting average is way higher. Christian Walker is that version.
Yeah, it all catches up at some point. And
Kyle Tucker, by the way, hitting .250 now.
Oh, is he really?
He had a good weekend.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw Bregman's hitting .250 also. For the Red Sox.
Yeah, and Tucker, for those of you who weren't paying attention to our Schadenfreude updates, Tucker started off really bad, but this weekend he was 4 for 8, 2 home runs, 5 RBIs.
Oh, he hit a couple bombs, huh? Okay, yeah. So, you know, I was a little distracted. I put my pettiness on the back burner. I got to get my
I was petty all week.
On.
I was sober and petty all
week. We need one of
long.
Us to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need one of
us. I was
us
like
to
my
be.
Very puritanical grandparents. Very pious, but very angry all
yes.
the time.
Yeah.
They felt like their anger was what God wanted of them. Yes.
That's right.
That's what I did. I channeled Wes and Doris this
good,
weekend.
Good. Good. So there you go. So 2-1, and the offense not great. San Francisco coming to town the next 3 days. So we get to say hi to our old friend Justin Verlander over the next couple of days here. That'll be fun out at the yard.
I hope he breaks a hip.
He's at that age. text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. What's up with the EJ Speed signing?
Oh, yeah.
We'll give a quick snippet answer here. So we will hit that in headlines, and we'll hit it harder at the top of the hour. But to answer
I'll
the
give it to you in 30 seconds.
Yeah, there you
EJ
go.
EJ Speed going into his seventh season, kind of a unique signing and the EJ speed. As a Texans fan, you've noticed, wow, this guy shows up a lot, especially in the run. Makes a lot of big plays. Had 7 tackles for a loss last year. His first 4 seasons, he only played situationally as a linebacker, and he was really good in those instances. The last 2 years, he's had opportunities to be the full-time starter, and he just has not been a complete and total full-time 3-down linebacker. He's not really as good in pass coverage as his athleticism would suggest. So this is a guy that I'm hoping you see a glow up from D'Amico Ryans. He's on a 1-year, $5 million deal. It's a prove-it contract. And I know a lot of people have wondered whether he's going to start or not. The track record would tell you he'll be a situational player, but I think that Christian Harris and Henry Toa are still in position of competing for a job. So I think he's in the mix. There's going to be a really fierce competition to be that other starting linebacker. But they usually only play with 2 linebackers.
I'm all of a sudden super intrigued by that competition with the, you know, with those, you got 4 bodies.
Yeah.
For a team that really only played 2 linebackers for most of the year last year.
Well, in a lot of ways, he's kind of like Devin White. Remember Devin White last year? Same thing. Really athletic, makes flash plays, but he's not consistent. I think the difference with EJ Speed is he's proven that as a situational player, he can be consistent. It's just that he hasn't shown that he can be a consistent 3-down linebacker. But you know who's been as a position coach the last 3 years, Sean? Richard Smith.
Yeah.
Former Texans defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
One of the worst defensive coordinators in the history of the NFL, at least while he was with Houston.
Yeah.
Yes.
So from what you've said, what I can deduce is, by definition, that he's going to another human being to coach him. He's going to get better coaching this year.
I think he will, yeah.
Yeah, good. Good. I like the signing, man. 1 year, $5 million. That's what this offseason's been about, tweaking depth. So we'll talk about that in headlines. Cougs on to the Final Four. We're going to give the Cougs plenty of attention in headlines. Good weekend. Rockets win last night. We'll get to all of that coming up next.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And now, 2 pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more. And get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, let's get to headlines. Payne and Pendergast. Sorry, I was talking to
headlines.
Seth about my...
Yeah. You had an appearance with Sean Astin this weekend.
On Friday,
Friday,
yeah.
After the show, you did a Q&A with him.
I did.
For what charity was it?
It was Christus Foundation for Healthcare.
Okay.
Here in Houston, yeah. And it was and mental health was the theme. And we did a Q&A. His mom was Patty Duke, very famous actress who suffered from bipolar disorder. Was undiagnosed for a number of years during his childhood and... diagnosed in 82. She went public in 87. And since she passed away, he's been an advocate for kind of destigmatizing mental health, going around the country talking about it. So, yeah, we did a Q&A, talk some mental health, talk some Goonies, talk some Stranger Things.
Yeah, I bet he probably has a way of just kind of talking about it with humor, humorously, like addressing serious topics, but without being super heavy-handed.
He's great at it. He's tremendous. He was really cool. I picked him up at his hotel with my wife and my mother-in-law in the back seat. Couldn't have been nicer. You know, a lot of big stars would be like, no, I want some, nobody else in the car. He was like, hey, ladies, how we doing? Yeah.
Well, he's done that. We had that little side discussion about character actors last week, which we didn't bring him up, but he's kind of transitioned into being kind of a character actor.
Very much so, yeah.
Which is fun. I remember the Brian, the big old guy from Tommy Boy, the father in Tommy Boy.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Brian Dennehy.
Thank you, Ben. Brian Dennehy was at a buffet with some other character actor, and the guy, it was a younger actor, I can't remember who it was, and he was kind of nervous to meet Brian Dennehy, and Brian Dennehy just learned over to him, and he's like, hey, character actors, we get to eat whatever the hell we want. Which is pretty on a movie set. You've got the leading men types who've had three carbs in the last 4 months, and meanwhile the character actors are just living life.
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah,
partying with the Teamsters
Sean
at night.
Sean Astin shoveling a plate of nachos in his face. So it was good. Thank you. It went very, very well. Also went very, very well for the Cougs this weekend in Indianapolis. They went on Friday against Purdue on a last-second great play that they ran. Called 51 was the name of the play, and Uzan puts in a layup to send them to the Elite Eight, and then they dominate Tennessee yesterday, Seth, 69-50. They got on the Vols early and often, and this game was never close.
They kept their foot on the Vols' throats.
They did.
If we're allowed to say that anymore.
Yes.
Come at me, bro. It's tournament time.
That's
damn
right.
It.
That's right.
I don't care. We're going to use all the metaphors that people don't want you to use.
This will be fun, man. U of H and Duke, I think 7:50 on Saturday night is tip time.
I just hadn't you been saying you don't hate Duke as much as you used to?
Well, that's going to change this week. But yes, I have been saying that.
That's how we have we got to start ramping up we can do it every day. 5 reasons to hate Duke.
Oh God, are you kidding me?
I mean, we could do it every segment for an entire show.
Start a podcast. Yes.
Everybody, start texting them in now. This is going to be more of a competition to make the top 5.
We're going to have 50 reasons by the end of the week. So that should be fun, man. That should be fun. The Cougs. First time they've been an underdog, certainly in this tournament, maybe all season long. They're a 4.5-point underdog.
Disrespect.
A very good Duke team, but I think it is a little disrespectful of this Cougs team. Honestly, I'm going to take the Cougs and all those points. We'll hit the Cougs more and acknowledge me. We will acknowledge them for their performance, but congrats to them on their way to the 7th Final Four in program history. Astros take 2 out of 3 from the Mets. That's good. We like seeing that. And the story from the weekend, Seth, the starting pitching. Framber Valdez, 7 shutout innings on Friday. Hunter Brown gets the loss, but was not bad. Framber on Thursday, Hunter on Friday, and then Spencer Arrighetti on Saturday was really, really good.
The starting pitching is everything that you would hope to be and everything that it wasn't at the beginning of last year. We heard the stat about how the Astros starting off 0-4 last year until Ronald Blanco had his no-hitter. Yep. We saw all that all weekend long. But so far, so good, especially with Spencer Arrighetti. Wow. And Arrighetti, I mean, he pitched a shutout. He had a mental flub that gave Jose Siri a run, but he pitched a shutout for 6 innings.
Yep.
The relievers I mean, Abreu and Hader couldn't have made it more stressful in game one. And in the third game, it was a little bit more routine.
Yeah.
It wasn't, it still feels like, all right, guys, this isn't how we're going to operate all year long.
Right.
But Brian King came in on Saturday also and had a really nice outing.
Yeah, King's
in
been
the seventh
good.
Inning.
Yep. I'm trying to see when we're going to get a look at Verlander this week.
Okay, so the other question going into the weekend that isn't in headlines, and I think notably so, was the experimental corner outfielders. So Cam Smith plays two games. They had a chance at making a really good play in right field in game one, but didn't, but it wasn't an error. Jose Altuve almost murdered Jake Myers in game one, but made the catch. Was it Friday or Saturday when he had that play, that Juan Soto hit out to left field? And it would have been a really nice catch if Altuve had made it, but it bounced, it caromed off the wall, and it looked like Altuve mistimed it.
I think
it was
Friday. Yeah.
That's been kind of a running theme with Altuve going back to spring training. He's in position to make the play, but the timing on the jump isn't quite there. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't an error or anything. It would have been a really nice catch. I would expect that's probably going to get better just with more reps. It was nice to see him, even on the routine fly balls, just get a lot of reps,
Yeah,
and it wasn't a story or a huge driving cause of a loss or anything over the weekend.
All right, so 2-1 for the Astros. Giants coming to town. Best I can tell, we're not going to get a look at Verlander in this series against the Giants. That's too bad. Rockets ran the Suns off the floor last night. This was a lot like the Cougs game. Rockets jumped on them early and never let up. And by the second half, they were flirting with 40 and 42-point leads against the Suns team that had Kevin Durant and Devin Booker both out there. Their two best players are playing in this game. This Suns team is embarrassing, man. They're the biggest disappointment in the NBA.
They should be ashamed of themselves.
I'm out on the KD to the Rockets idea.
Just based on that game?
Based on the three games. Well, the Rockets swept them this season. They beat them in all three games. And so kind of based... I mean, I said this the last time the two teams played in a much closer game. Like, Kevin Durant, in the previous loss to the Rockets, played like his usual number of minutes, took 12 shots.
It's a recruiting masterstroke by the Rockets, Sean. We know that the best way to recruit Kevin Durant to your team is to beat him.
To destroy
in
him.
A series, yes. So in the regular season series, they beat him 3-0. So now he's desperately want to, if you can't beat him, join him. Join the Rockets.
Do I want him? Do I want Kevin Durant? Like,
now, I'll tell you what. Let's circle back after the first playoff series.
Okay, fair.
The way the Rockets are playing now, it doesn't feel like it would be as flukish that they can just feast on offensive rebounds and second chance points and fast break type of stuff. It's really hard to beat a more talented and more a more veteran team with scrappiness. But I almost don't even call it scrappiness now, because part of it is with Steven Adams and his rebounding, it's scientific.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just really, really good at it, as well as being a burly human being.
Yep.
And then their Twin Towers lineup has been super, super effective. That's going to be interesting in the playoffs. You can't go out and... There's some absurd stat, like when they're in that lineup, the rate of rebounding is at an all-time high. Like, there's never been anybody as efficient rebounding as when they're in that lineup.
Yep.
So the Rockets will be the most unique team in the playoffs, and it's going to be fun to see it maybe just catch somebody in the kidneys with an upper.
Yeah, they're definitely the ones that feel like, compared to the last few years, they're kind of crashing the party. I think this is what they're going to be the next few years. It's obviously a very young core, and you got some veterans who are going to be on the team for a couple more years. And I don't know, I put Acknowledge Me together last night before the Rockets game. Hey, Ben, real quick, just in case, because I think it was before I would have put Jalen Green. I got to acknowledge Jalen Green, man.
Acknowledge me!
He was the best player on the floor last night, and he is getting better and better and better as an all-around basketball player. And he answers the bell. There's no load managing with him. He loves to play. Jalen Green is really... I've been very critical of Jalen Green. This version of him that we've been getting this season, and in particular last night, is really growing on me.
It's the appropriate takeover of the game. As opposed to trying to take the game over when you're not suited to do it, or trying to take the game over when the flow isn't right. He's really just started to have a good feel for when to pour it on.
Yeah,
fun to watch the maturation.
Yep, good way to put it. EJ Speed signs with the Texans, former Colts linebacker. We're going to get to that in about 6 or 7 minutes from now in a little more detail. But 1 year, up to $5 million. He will be plunked into that linebacker room to compete with Christian Harris and Henry Toa for snaps at linebacker, it would appear.
Yeah, I think Azeez Alshire is the only guy that you can set in stone
He's
as a starter.
Yeah.
If I had to handicap it, I would say Toa. I feel like Christian Harris is getting a lot. I feel like people are mistaking his weird injury last year with his actual performance on the field. Because even when he came back, he didn't play much.
Yeah.
They didn't give him any snaps at all. But he had also just missed the entire season with a mysterious calf injury. So, but those, I would handicap it. Henry Toa, Christian Harris, EJ Speed.
Okay.
In terms of chance to be the starting linebacker alongside Azeez Alshire.
Okay. And Texas Children's Houston Open. Congrats to Minwoo Lee holding off Gary Woodland and Scottie Scheffler with a record-setting -20 under par performance for the weekend. All right, so there you go. Those are your headlines. You can text in 713-572-4610. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text page. All right, we mentioned it. The Texans did sign EJ Speed. The question we've gotten a lot of on the text page today is, hey, isn't this the guy who had a lot of beef with C.J. Stroud, him and his buddy, they were podcasting. Yeah. Yes. And we will go back through. Is this beef that can be squashed and buried in time for training camp or by next week? We'll discuss that coming up next.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House of the Home Theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.